Hey there, and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and today is episode number 259. Glad to be back in front of the microphone, and I am sorry I'm a few days later getting to this than I usually am. It's just been a great time of year, a busy fall. I've got some winterizing chores that I've been working on, getting ready for various hunting trips, doing all sorts of things at work, onboarding some new clients, and just enjoying the great weather that exists. So please accept my apologies for my delay of a couple of days. I really appreciate you as a listener and a member of this community. And in fact, that's what this episode is essentially all about. It's a mailbag episode, and those are always made up of the questions that I receive, questions, comments, input from this community, from listeners of the podcast, from clients that I coach and consult with, as well as through direct messaging on Instagram and emails. So I got a couple of topics. Some of them have been inquired about redundantly, actually, and in different ways, and they're based on some of the things that I've been talking about here on the podcast, as well as just topics that are prevalent in our fitness, health, and physical performance, longevity, athletic development industry. Love that one. And that's what I've got for you today. So I've got a couple of topics that I will try to touch on. And I think I've got to just ramble on for just one moment more that I'm really so happy and fortunate and thankful to have these wonderful folks like you that I get to engage with and work with, because it is indeed enjoyable. It challenges me. It helps me to learn and grow, but it also gives me great satisfaction when, you know, I can help people to achieve performances and feel great. And that's really what I'm here for and what this is all about. So without further ado, the mailbag episode. And I think the mailbag came up from PK. You know, he's my often co-host. And he, when we started taking questions and getting input from the audience, he said, well, let's call it the mailbag. And it's stuck ever since. And that's been going on for a number of years now, since we're at episode 259. Thanks again to PK and to you. So the first topic that I'd like to get into is extensive plyometrics. And so first of all, I should probably give some simple definitions. A plyometric, or a plyo, it's a classification of exercise that is somewhat explosive, and it utilizes what's known as the SSC, or stretch shortening cycle of muscle contraction. So sometimes we load and explode, and that time frame where we're converting energy into the system and then putting it back out. So that's kind of converting, let's say, kinetic energy to potential energy and back to kinetic, known as an amortization phase. Well, that's what a plyometric exercise is. And so some of the classic things that you might think about would be various explosive types of jumps, box jumps among them. Well, we can actually look at these as being intensive or extensive. And very globally, the intensive plyometric is one in which there is high load, high force, max intent. And then the extensive one is one in which those things are a bit lower, and it's probably done over great repetition. So if I was to contrast, or just compare and contrast really simply, an intensive plyometric might be a really high depth jump. And so a depth jump would be where we drop off of a box of substantial height to the athlete in question, so that could be inches to feet, and then explode back up onto another box. And you know, there's tons and tons of ways to do these things, but that's a great one. So you can do that with or without load, single leg double, so forth and so on. But that's an intensive plyometric, and there's a place for it. Man, it's fun. It's awesome to get to the point to be able to do that. But it's also difficult and challenging, and we have to make it safe, and we have to both scale the intensive plyometric for each athlete and also progress them along to get those benefits, which are many. And there's such a value in utilizing landing and propulsive mechanics. Those are the keys really to many sports and even to life and some of the things that we do. So that's really what an intensive plyometric is. But since the topic is, you know, several people have asked, you know, what is an extensive plyometric? How can I use that in my training? Well, an extensive plyometric, probably one of the simplest ones, a great example would be jumping rope. You know, it's, you know, you're basically popping up and down and doing that, you know, over usually for time. I mean, sometimes you can count reps with a jump rope in the early stages. That's reasonable, but taking it up over greater time really works on foot and ankle function. I mean, sometimes people would say foot and ankle stiffness, and then people will argue, is it really stiffness that we're working on? But yeah, it's actually that ability to, in a pulsatile or staccato or repetitive manner with a jump rope, make the foot and ankle transitorily stiff, just quickly stiff to boom, you know, bounce back up off the ground, but then relax in the air, of course. And that's kind of an art form, that jumping rope. It's an interesting thing too, because unless one has practiced it at any age, it is not always that pretty to see someone do it. And I'm talking about high school athletes as well as some of the folks that I work with in their 70s and 80s. And it's a great a training tool, the jump rope. It's very inexpensive, even a really nice one or a speed rope. But I recommend that oftentimes. In fact, talking about other extensive forms of plyometrics, I like to do a series of things with a low box. And a low box can even be a board, you know, like a small section of, say, a 2x12 or something like that. So a person, you know, 2x12 is actually only 1.5 inches tall, so they can stand on that. That actually works as a box or a height for many people. But then we can, you know, low might be as low as 3, 4, 6, maybe 10 or 12 inches, again, for a very accomplished athlete. So if we're doing extensive plyometrics with a low box, we figure out what the height is, first of all. And then there's a couple of exercises that I like to do. The first one, I like to call it the drop and sink. And so this is basically a depth drop where the person steps off into the air. And again, if they're on a 1.5 inch board and they're dropping down, that still counts. But they work on making a 2-foot landing. So we don't want to hear, I'm going to hit my counter here. We don't want to hear this, you know, the feet are staggered. We want to hear, and that's kind of what, you know, we're looking for as far as how we hit the ground. But because it's a drop and sink, we're using an absorptive method. And this is oftentimes called a triple flexion strategy. So the knee, hip, and ankle are all flexing to absorb force as the body is sinking, and the musculotendinous units are lengthening under that force. So I'll oftentimes put that one into someone's program, just helping them to work on landing mechanics. Then we move along and we say, okay, well, after the drop and sink, what's next? And I say, well, let's go to the drop and stick. So this is using primarily a knee-focused strategy, basically sticking the landing and not sinking or absorbing too much. And this does create that impulse that goes through the body that helps to strengthen the connective tissues, first of all, but also help the athlete to start getting moving towards being able to convert force rapidly. And again, it's very safe to do if we're doing this, you know, off low heights and low loads. And so we can do multiple reps generally of these types of extensive plyos, but not really turning it into some like aerobic or endurance activity. We might do in, you know, some number, let's say 3 or 4, 10 or 12 repetitions, but there's a kind of a rest break, a focus and regather in between, because we're trying to train that quality at the impulse more so than just get the conditioning effect. Other places to do that. So we go from drop and sink, we go from drop and stick, now we go to drop and pop. And that's mostly an ankle strategy. Again, these things trickle over, so you're still using the rest of the body, of course. But drop and pop to me is where, you know, I'll have these athletes, you know, step off, or they can even jump off lightly their low box, but then they work on hitting the ground on the forefoot and then popping into the air. And so most of that's happening at the ankle, and that's really the epitome of this progression to just get to be able to be quick and elastic. And probably worth talking about really quickly, you know, when we look at elasticity, you know, we can even use the term, viscoelastic is what I was going to say. And so a lot of these biologic tissues are viscoelastic. So if you put load onto them slowly, almost like a drop and sink, then we have deformation in the tissue. And that's just built into the how the system works, not just on a physical level, but with the neurological system or CNS as well. But as opposed to being, say, viscous and deforming, we also have this elastic capacity. And so where people get confused, I think, is they think of elastic as only being, say, like flexible and loose and absorptive. But actually, elastic is where that stiffness comes in. You have to turn yourself momentarily into a steel rod. And that's how energy is transformed. And how you get the bounce, or in the case of the drop and pop, the pop. So fun to talk about terms, but also to learn these things and then use them in the training. And then they really, really do help. So you can look at different examples. Obviously, these things, when you've got an athlete that has to be bouncy, let's say it's in tennis, basketball, volleyball, this really does help. Having that ability, this is related to that ability to change direction. We can even use this in, let's say, various mechanisms with skater bounds or with drop steps and different types of movements. So now suddenly we're working with hockey or soccer or football, and it's applicable there. And then with your runners, a lot of the things that these exercises will do, they'll probably help. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say probably help to prevent injury, because they do help to create durability in the tissues, as well as the ability to kind of access better form and technique. But where these things really help is they decrease GCT, or ground contact time. So that quick foot on the ground popping off, it pays off for a marathoner. Just look at Eliud Kipchoge. Let me try that one again. Eliud Kipchoge, who recently broke his own world record in the marathon. And, he's definitely poppy as he's running along. And that's how you run fast. One of the ways is you don't spend too much time on the ground. You make those conversions very quick. And in this case, just a lot of them going 26.2 miles, but not unlike any elite sprinter going, let's say, 40-yard dash on grass, 60 meters indoors, 100 meters outdoors. So enough about probably extensive plyometrics, but let me know via the same mechanisms where you guys have asked some of these questions. If you'd like some other examples of plyometric training, maybe a show that's more dedicated, or a video where old daddy can get on the Lifetime Athlete YouTube channel and give you some examples of these things. And I'm at a point right now where I probably can do that. I've kind of gotten back to being able to do some of this in my training. Had a tough year with that shoulder reconstruction. It's really interesting. You know, when you get your shoulder reconstructed, you're limited with how much running and jumping and high force things you can do for a while. So nice to be back into that arena, but I also have tons of clients who are accomplished athletes who would be happy to be in these videos if you get tired of seeing me. So moving along to the next discussion point today. And this is something that I would say a few people have asked me about. It's not always top of mind, but it is a popular subject that some books have been written about recently. And it does come up also when working with youth athletes, particularly when engaging with their parents on this topic. And it's this: diversification versus specialization. So the words are fairly self-explanatory, but to diversify in an athletic training or long-term athletic development model means that, oh, we're going to work on learning different motor skills, playing a variety of sports, and becoming well-rounded, versatile athletes. And that's there's a great thing to be gained from doing that, and a few things that I'm going to offer up. But also specialization, at some point, many athletes will say, I really want to be good at this thing. This is my sport, my goal, my pastime, my passion. Or they say, hey, I like this thing and I want to get better at it, get best at it, get the most out of my potential. Or I notice I'm just... this is what I seem to be good at. So I want to go down that path. So these are the things that drive specialization. Well, I usually look at things, I like these graphic models. And so you could put this on a continuum, use some type of vector or ray. You could graph it. You could make it a bell-shaped curve. Any of those things can apply. And so I say this, diversify early. And there's good research to support this through motor skill development, looking at even at function and health in humans through the lifespan, like developmental stuff, as well as athletes. And so at some point, probably I'm going to push it out, gosh, out to about age 20. And that some people will say, well, that's too far. But again, based on the data that I've read and also observed, it's really good to keep a person doing all sorts of things, playing all different kinds of sports, that the central nervous system will develop maximally, and that we actually can train that central nervous system at any age. But the benefits or the gains we make when we're especially in the adolescent years and pre-adolescent even, they're greater. And so it's super important. Now, some people might say, gosh, I get really good at something later, high school, moving into college. Yeah, okay. So we do see people specializing. But interestingly enough, the people that seem to have the greatest results and longest careers didn't specialize too quick. Now, there are some different examples. That's the Roger versus Tiger argument out there. But overall, you'll see a lot of people that, let's say they're collegiate athletes in football, basketball, baseball. They actually played all of those sports and more coming up through middle school, high school. So that's just an example there. We want to diversify early. I think that does help to develop all these capacities in the body. So we've got, layers of things, and we want to be proficient at the developmental sequence. We want to, from an exercise viewpoint, be reasonable with all those basic motor patterns of exercise. So, we want to squat, hinge, lunge. I'm going to throw in some extras, not just rotate, push, pull, change direction, locomote. Then we go into the capacities that we can develop in our organism and the capacities of human performance: strength, speed, power, agility, endurance. All of those things are trainable again at any time, but if we can touch on those coming up, it is extremely helpful. And then lastly, we can get into a broad skill set, narrow it down like a funnel. And that's where I think specialization comes in. I like to say at some point somebody's going to specialize. Don't want to see them do it too early, but I'll say, okay, late high school, early college, I guess you're bound to do that in our societal model. But then you can stay specialized for several decades for the most part, doing mainly your one thing that you love. Let's say out there somewhere and possibly into your 40s, give or take, late 30s for some, early 50s for others. But eventually, if you specialize too much or only focus on, let's say, that one thing, maybe it's golf, it's tennis, it's mountain biking, it's being a long distance runner, whatever, it bites you in the buttock because you start to lose and atrophy and they go away. Those very other things that make the well-rounded athlete. The body gets really good at doing this one thing, but it kind of epigenetically hears the message that you're giving it. You don't need to do these other things anymore, so we'll just throw those out, you know, the baby and the bathwater. Well, what we want to start thinking then is, well, that becomes a problem because we start to have life tasks, you know, whether it's yard work or home improvement or any chores. We may have sports that we occasionally jump into. The grandkids come over, you want to play with the grandkids. And if you don't have those skills, well, that's how you get hurt. And so it's important to start diversifying again as we progress through life to avoid a functional inadequacy. But it's really interesting, too. It becomes almost additive back to the specialist. And so I get these people who are, let's say, runners, let's say they're golfers, whatever, and they've only done that thing for so long. Then we start bringing back in some other types of training. So obviously for, like, you know, the golfer, if they only played golf and didn't do conditioning, we're working on different types of conditioning and, you know, not just improving, say, endurance or speed and power output, but, you know, mobility and doing some movement screens and motion checks, helping them to kind of shore things back up. Or take that runner, you know, a runner, if they're just doing slow, you know, long distance running, straight line critter, they will become stiff, slow, weak, and fragile over enough time. And again, it takes a while of only doing that. But if we can get them, hey, let's actually get you doing some extensive plyos, some change of direction work on coming back to being a movement smith again, where you own every position and you have mastery or competence of motion in every direction. Well, it actually trickles back into their running and they actually start running faster because now their body is a more athletic being and it can convert force and use better stride mechanics without even getting into better shape. So it's always mechanics first, metabolic second in that model. So that's a few things to say about diversifying versus specializing. You know, let's diversify early. We can specialize for quite a while in midlife, and then we can diversify again to optimize what we're doing. So that's one of the models that I explain in much greater detail in my book, Animal Fit, Unleash Your Inner Beast and Unlock Your Athletic Potential. You can go to the Animal Fit menu item at thelifetimeathlete.com. Learn more about it, take the quiz, look at some examples of people and the types of animals that they are, and pick up a copy of the book. And I think you'll find it to be very helpful. So assessment and programming are really useful when we're talking about these things. We need to figure out, first of all, who are we? And who is this athlete in front of us? If you're a coach, trainer, physical therapist, athletic trainer, physician assistant, nurse practitioner, you know, this type of information is helpful for you as well, because if you're giving people advice, it's very important to know who they are and how you custom tailor the advice. So assessment and programming, that's really where the money is in helping a person say, okay, well, you might be lacking in a few of these areas. Don't feel bad about that, but we can help you to bring those back up. And then also, hey, you're really good, or you want to be really good at this one thing, and so here's how we do it. So cool stuff. The next topic, and this will be the final topic today in what probably is going to be a fairly brief podcast, the movement pyramid, or perhaps a better movement model that I'd like to say. So for the longest time, perhaps, I've been talking about movement. And so, okay, the distinction that I like to make is movement is moving and stationary is static. And so that's really how we look at what humans do. I used an umbrella model for quite a while. And it's an umbrella of movement under which there are two main categories. On one side, you have GDA, or general daily activity. And that's the same thing as activities of daily living, or ADLs. But, you know, it's like, okay, are you washing the dishes, mopping the floor, walking out to the mailbox, getting in and out of your vehicle, going to the grocery store, fidgeting, whatever. These are general daily activities. And they pile up. It's kind of, you know, consistent with activity trackers and step counts and that kind of thing. Well, then on the other side, we have this semi or totally official side of movement that most people think of as exercise. And then I said, well, I'm going to call it training because it's all training, whether it's rehab or Olympian stuff. It's training. And when you make your exercise training, it suddenly becomes purpose-driven and it's more meaningful. You tend to be more consistent and get more results. And so we've got GDA and training in that umbrella model. And then I would filter in the idea that, well, we also want the element of play to be alive in that training, and competition is also a part of play, and it is good, and we need that to complete the human beast. And so the umbrella model was pretty good. But over time, I've thought, well, actually, I want to look at it as a pyramid instead. So that's where the movement pyramid comes out. And so we have that foundation of GDA. We know that, you know, humans do well if they have a relative, you know, let's call it a relatively modest amount of movement every day or daily activity. Whether you say that's hitting a 10, 12, 15,000 step point or equivalent each day or not, you're somewhere in there. I think that's probably fairly true. You tend to have more circulatory perfusion and less stasis in blood flow when that's happening. And then when you look at the metabolism, it tends to be regulated by this activity and we don't have stagnation. So that's the bottom of the pyramid, the GDA. And again, depending on who I'm talking to and what that minimum level is, I might go up and down with those recommendations. Then I've got training. And so training, again, is the exercise. It's what we do to maintain or develop those capacities, maybe that I was talking about earlier, whether we're diversifying or specializing or whether we're doing plyometrics, you know, those are things that are targeting performance output in the human body. And so we want to train for that. So we layer it. So now we've got our GDA. Now we've got our training on top of that. And then next up, I think it's summed up simply with a model of three. So the apex or the triangle, the peak of that pyramid is play. And play is fun and joy and its movement and its gamification, and it does have competition in it, and it says it all. It's everything. So GDA, training, and play. It's the critical movement pyramid for any lifetime athlete, and that's really a model that I'll probably flesh out more. I'll probably write about it quite a bit in various formats as well as speak about it. But I think that helps me to simplify how I'm conveying the necessity and the beauty of movement in the human. And also it's a tool that others can utilize to perhaps great success. So those were topics that I've been asked multiple questions about. So I didn't necessarily name each person. I want to thank everyone for helping me to realize I needed to talk about those things. And hey, if this podcast is helping you, well, by all means, you can help me by sharing it. You know, simply share it with someone else that this might make a difference in their lives. Hey, feel free to subscribe if you haven't already. And if you really have a few minutes and you'd like to give a rating or review, those are so appreciated and they're so helpful, so powerful in driving the algorithms to, you know, get more exposure and traction with what we're all about. So maybe give that a thought. I appreciate that. Also, if you like this idea of interacting with me as your coach on a regular basis and getting programming that's designed around a lot of these models for the whole year, and it's really organized, plus you're part of a community and you have some interaction, consider joining the Training Tribe. You can look at the Training Tribe menu item at thelifetimeathlete.com. And really, for a coffee a day, you're getting really the same type of science that all the pros and Olympians are using, and it's there for all of us. Or you could sign up for coaching. So I do coaching consultations. I do them one at a time. I do them in a package. I do them via subscription, help people design their training programs, set up their home gym, get lean, get healthy, get out of pain, and crush goals. And you know, all those things fit under my umbrella. That's been my wheelhouse. That's my training and education. And I'm almost at 40 years of doing it. I love it. And I love working with folks who are like-minded. So give those things a consideration. And hey, as a lifetime athlete, I know you're already doing it, but enjoy life. Coach Jay-Z signing out till next time. And thanks so much for joining me today on the podcast.